say I'm good at this.
Hello, welcome to Taking It Down. Hopefully you are a returning listener, but if not, a bit about us. We are the pop culture podcast for the Alabama Take, and we normally cover television and movies, occasionally some books and music. Today we're here to talk about the HBO Max release of Judas and the Black Messiah. Plus, we tend to start the show with some odds and ends, this week including WandaVision thoughts. I'm the host and editor-in-chief of the website, and joining me today, our co-host, Adam Morrow and Donovan Ronwald.
Great to be here as always.
It's not great for me to be here. I am locked into this contract. I can't get out. So I'm doing the classic where I'm just producing a shitty covers album just to get out of my contractual obligation. Baby, I'm out of here. I'm starting my own pod.
This is Donovan's self-portrait era.
What about a greatest hits where you have to write one new song? Can you handle that?
Yeah, probably. Here, let me try.
Tom Petty style?
Yeah.
Tom Petty style. Fart, but. Yeah, I can do that.
No, that's basically Last Dance of Mary Jane. You're right.
It is when people in Tuscaloosa play.
Jeez.
Yeah.
You know, this is neither here nor there, but I really think, like, when I was growing up, I'd really only heard Free Fallin'. And then I used to kind of think I didn't like Petty because I'd only heard people in Tuscaloosa covering him.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like you sit down and actually listen and you're like, this guy, these songs are so simple at the same time so complex.
Turns out the complexity is lost on Tuscaloosa. Yeah.
I was going to say, when I heard it at the Red Shed, it was just simple.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. It took exactly 1 minute, 45 seconds for us to talk about Tom Petty. So there you go.
Pretty good. Can we just marvel at the fact that he had to turn in a greatest hits record with a new song and did it?
And it turned out to be his probably best-selling song.
I mean, the idea, the pressure of sitting down and being like, here's the greatest work that I have done. Let me contribute one song to it.
And a cover.
Unbelievable.
I wonder how much he thought about it. I bet he did a lot, but like his persona is so cool, right?
I don't want to be this might be the most boring podcast topic ever, but I can remember the exact moment when I first heard Last Chance with Mary Jane. Very, very clearly.
Please tell. I feel like this is good podcast fodder.
I was in a car with some friends. I was 16, maybe 17, however old I would have been at the time. And we were on our way to Amory, Mississippi, because there was nothing to do where I grew up. And the closest Walmart was 30 minutes away. And we were probably going to buy a cassette tape, honestly. And so there were like three or four of us in the car. I was in the front seat. And I remember we were like, what is this? This is awesome. And we turned it up. And I remember my first thing out of my mouth was, I think it might be Bob Dylan. Hold on. And it was, and then we got a few more minutes into it. And I think we all kind of figured out it was Tom Petty, or one of us did. But yeah, I remember thinking when he got into the Oh My My, I thought, is this Dylan? Is this a new Dylan album?
That part is so rad.
I mean, so you heard that song and basically the way that would be engineered to hear that song.
On the radio.
An adolescent on the radio, driving in a car.
Probably in the summer, but I can't guarantee. It might have been winter. I really can't guarantee that. Whenever it was released.
Either way.
Yeah.
Hell of a way to do it.
Oh, yeah. Life-changing. There's a before and after of Last Chance with Mary Jane. There's also a before and after of hearing Last Chance with Mary Jane in the Red Shed. So it's like... your life changes both times.
Two sides of the coin there.
Guys, talk to me. Do y'all have COVID?
I think I'm negative.
That's good.
I got the sniffles. Is that COVID?
Yes, it is. This year.
But I can smell. Let me tell you, the kitty litter's in the house. I can still smell. Trust me.
Who's in charge of the kitty litter?
It's me.
Every day? Is it an everyday situation?
It has to. We've got three cats, yeah.
Yeah, same here. We got three, and so, I have to scoop it every afternoon.
I mean, it's just like you have to.
So Donovan, I got one cat who has such a strong piss stream that she pisses. sometimes it goes out of the box.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, no.
Good for her.
Not for me, because I go in there and I'm like, God damn it. There's like a litter mat and I'm like, who pissed on the mat again?
My favorite is when somebody felt too... So we have the kind with the cover and they have to go in it, which they mm-hmm. are pretty good about. My favorite is when one of them is just like, I'm not feeling it. and it doesn't even go in. It's like, what is wrong with you?
What do they do? Put a little boom, boom, boom on the floor there?
they pee on the ramp.
Uh-huh. Well, that's very similar.
Maybe they're doing it to spite the other cats.
Oh, yeah, they did. Totally.
They were watching TV. Got to keep your head in a litter box when you're watching TV.
We've also figured out that they tend to hide just around the corner from the litter box, and then when another cat comes out, they'll chase them and aggravate them or attack them. So, yeah, that's 100%. One of them will absolutely make a little poop in the entryway just to be like...
Hi. Yeah, because they're... And I got, like, I did it. Now I got to get out of here before you get me.
Here's a segue. So, cats. WandaVision. I don't have a segue, honestly.
Still no cats in WandaVision.
Still no cats in WandaVision. There was a dog. What happened to the
dog?
What
did Wanda do with all the pets?
Well, they did have the dog last week.
The dog met the tragic end.
Yeah.
Did she not bring it back to life? I honestly can't remember.
No, she told them, remember, she told them, don't grow out of this. You have to feel it. Mm, and then Uncle Pietro came back.
That's right. And that's where we picked up with this week. So if you haven't watched this week's episode 5, I think, we do have full-blown Pietro visiting the West Side, New Jersey area. What'd you guys make of this episode?
I think that... this was one I very much enjoyed this episode, probably because, like, with the other one, you know, like, okay, I know this style of sitcom, but just the really specific, like, early aughts stuff that they were doing, I found very funny. And then it also was very, it was very creepy too, right? Like,
this was the creepiest one.
Vision going out and finding the people stuck. Yeah, that was great.
Have you guys read the George Saunders short story collection?
I have not.
Is it 10th of December? December? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one story in that this made me think of, the Simplica Girl Diaries. Don, have you read that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a while back.
The people stuck in the yard with like a tear coming out of their eye.
Yeah.
It was just so brutal. I mean, this was such a dark episode. It's a great, I mean, we talk about loving Halloween stuff. This is a pretty strong Halloween episode entry because it kind of used that to pivot.
It was, and like asking the questions like, where are you keeping the kids, right? Like, and when Vision, you know, meets the name, whose name I can, Agatha? I can never seem to remember her name.
Agnes.
Agnes, thank you. You know, I like her, like, we're done. We're done moment. Like, you're dead. You don't know what the Avengers are. This is over. I'm in hell. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a version of hell for everyone involved except for perhaps Wanda. And, well, Vision not yet, but it's getting there.
So one of the things I keep thinking about is in Flann O'Brien's book, The Third Policeman. Basically, the thesis of it is hell is round like a wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place where you can never move forward. You're always stuck repeating what you did. And I think, you know, I think Wanda's kind of in hell too.
Yeah.
Because she can't move forward.
Yeah, we talked about last week how she's the villain and the protagonist and the villain.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I like that. I'll say a little Evan Peters goes a long way for me. I'm not his biggest fan. So he is Quicksilver. I didn't like the other guy. I forget his last. I think his last name was Taylor. But
oh, you mean Euro Trash Quicksilver?
Yeah, I didn't like that either. I just. But you know, Evan Peters is really. I guess it's because I associate him so much with Ryan Murphy's work, and I'm just Ryan Murphy is not good to me. So, what would you guys think about the full blown episode with Quicksilver with this? Pietro.
He worked pretty well for the, Donovan, you talked about the early aughts, late 90s vibe. So
yes.
He kind of fit into that world very well, and he may not have into earlier homages, but something about him, he could have played the zany uncle that showed up in one of those sitcoms. So it worked for me. I know there's some pretty elaborate theories on who he might actually be. Is he who he says? I don't know if those still hold up after she accidentally sees him riddled with bullets or not, but
oh yeah,
there were some, you know, multiverse kind of thoughts going on about who he actually is that my very
what is one of the theories?
Natalie proposed that it could be Loki somehow.
Oh, wow.
Working his way into this and using, I don't know. She has reasons because she's a dork, but
hey, we love Natalie. We should have had her on.
But we should have. I don't know how that holds up now that, you know, her vision, well, lowercase vision, her sight revealing what is actually there in that moment may dispel some of that. It may just mean that she has reanimated some version of him. And he seems to kind of be aware that that's happening, which was it added to the creepiness.
That was creepy, where he's like, you want me to, you know, he was doing the thing that the neighbors were doing, right? It was like, you want me to take that again? Like, I'm here to, you know, I'm here to, he's from Boston, in my head.
Oh, is he?
He had to cause your brother-in-law some trouble. No, in my head, he's from Boston.
Oh, I didn't know if the actor was legitimately from.
I have no idea where he's from. How fun were the classic costumes, huh? The 70s?
Loved it.
Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch and Vision costume.
You guys just like the Scarlet Witch costume because of Elizabeth Olsen.
I mean, nobody's complaining.
It's a classic costume, Blaine.
It really is. She's a great-looking gal. So I was reminded of Malcolm in the Middle pretty instantly. What sitcom did you think
that
of?
That was the vibe I got, Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
And I thought they even kind of aped the theme song, right?
Yeah.
Pretty well. Like it was pretty close.
That kind of semi-bad rock.
They did a great job with like the constant cutting back to the kids and like they're narrating and stuff, which I felt like I find this profoundly annoying, but I'm deeply entranced by it because you're playing it so well.
would you guys have shit a gold brick if Bryan Cranston had
absolutely
up just party? About to say that. He's Jeez. Suddenly the neighbor somehow chasing a kid around or something.
How great would that have been? He's busy. He's making that show.
Maybe a pizza on the roof and really cross streams.
Here's something I was thinking of too, watching this episode, because I really did enjoy it. And I liked things like, you know, the scene right at the end where she's pushing the boundary, her barrier, and everything's transforming into... And I just thought, like, watching this and, you know, it seems fairly, it's not the best thing in the world, but it seems fairly tight. It kind of has the vibe of the movies in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
How do those Netflix shows look like a piece of shit next to this or what?
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate the money they're spending on this to make it look like a part of the MCU. If you're going to do it, if you're going to take a big swing, you know, do it.
I mean, was Disney broke in the year 2012 or whenever they started rolling out?
Well, they've got a lot more money now.
That's
I'll say
definitely
that.
True. But it almost seemed for some of those, and there, you know, there's some good parts of them, but it almost seemed like they were doing the thing like the first Fox X-Men movie where it's like, oh, people don't want it to be too superhero-y, so we got to make sure it's gritty. And this, they're kind of leaning into it, right? Where it's like, nah, it's superheroes. They got the colorful costume. Like, give the people what they want.
I think Elizabeth Olsen had to press them for these original costumes. So they must have had to work that in the storyline.
Really?
I think she really wanted it, if I'm not mistaken.
I love it. I love I love seeing them because they're so, like I used to read that, like the reprints, I'd get them out from the library.
Yeah.
Read the reprints of the Avengers or whatever, and they're deeply goofy costumes, but they're also just in my back of my brain. So it's fun to see them.
Yeah, it is. I'm landing after watching this episode. I'm landing that they made a bit of a misstep in trying to choke these episodes down to like 30 minutes or 35 minutes. This one really is starting to show its fringes. It's starting to show its wear because it just isn't getting enough done. It needs about 10 or 15 more minutes of development, I think, character development at times. I think it needs more explanation. It just, each episode is starting to feel like we're just going to give you a half inch of information when really we as an audience probably at this point need about, you know, 2, 3, 4 inches or a foot worth of information.
I agree. Like, you see the run times, right? And they're all like 37, 38 minutes. There's like 7 minutes of credits.
Yeah, there is.
If they would,
much like a movie.
I think if they'd even just let it breathe into like a 30-minute mark, like a full 30, instead of like, they're almost shooting it like it's on TV with commercials, you know, because you, right, you get much more of the 22, 23-minute mark.
Can we talk about the commercial that they made with the shark?
Yeah, let's do.
I just wanted to give a shout out because I loved that. That was like the commercial of my childhood.
Yes.
It took on a very creepy term, and I was like, oh, this is very, very, very familiar. I thought it was great. I wonder if they won't up the run times as we progress into like the golden era prestige TV time. Like maybe they're reflecting the world that they're imitating, you know, like because all those limited character development happening in quote unquote in universe in the Wanda world makes sense. Outside of that, obviously we need a little more time. And I wonder if as it goes on, the episodes get a little longer and longer.
Yeah, that commercial was a very 1998 commercial, wasn't it?
It was great. That was great. Same with Adam. Like, something in the back of my brain was like, you're nine.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And this is edgy TV.
Yeah. It's like, why did everything have to be extreme sports?
All I can think of is like, every time I see that now, all I can think of is the Poochie episode.
Yeah,
it's like, exactly. Maybe prostify him by 10%. Yeah. Make him a little more extreme.
Children of the X Games, we are.
What were they trying? Was it Sean? Yeah, like Sean Way was the big deal, right? Like the snowboarder.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, huge.
Yeah, Donovan, I think you called it early alts at the beginning. This is more of a 95 through 98 vibe, right?
Well, we yep. can date it because the movie theater was showing The Incredibles and The Parent Trap.
I didn't know that those were contemporaneous, were they? Did they come out?
I don't think so. Parent Trap came out earlier, and then The Incredibles was 2003 or 4, something like that.
Parent Trap was like a solid 98.
Yeah.
99 tops.
So they seem to be sticking to the sitcom world. What's the next? It would be early aughts or mid aughts or whatever. So what's.
So does
what's
this mean possible? That we're due for the Office? Like the Office
yes,
episode?
That's it. No, well, okay, so. I saw a steal from the next episode, and it looks more Modern Family, which is in the vein.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, they took their cue from The Office as far as breaking the fourth wall, talking into the camera, documentary style.
What about a Mad Men turn? I'd really appreciate that.
Yeah, I think they're just sticking sitcom.
I think it's a sitcom thing, yeah.
I really do. I would love a Mad Men turn or Sopranos.
Love to see a Sopranos episode.
They're already in New Jersey. I mean, wouldn't it be great if
that's
they
what
had,
I'm thinking?
If Christopher was happened to be one of the citizens that she's entrapped.
I like this podcast because it puts out kind of material evidence that I shouldn't be in charge of anything. Like,
go
maybe,
on.
Maybe we want a vision. We can rostify it by 10%. Make it more extreme.
How many episodes are left? 4? Are they doing 9 episodes of this? Am I right about that? So they're going to have to get out of decade territory at some point.
Just slow it to a crawl.
Yeah, maybe. I'll throw out one more bit of information I found interesting. It looks as though Monica Rambeau is going to be, she's going to get some powers. Did you catch that about her cells are changing
yes.
now?
Yeah. That's a, who knows, that could have long-term implications, right?
Mm-hmm.
In that universe.
Right, that's kind of her origin story. She got sucked into Wanda's fictional world, and now has developed powers because of it. So
I welcome Dawn into a long-term place
yes.
in the universe.
100%.
I wonder if they're setting up for the new Captain Marvel because she's that's very what, fun.
Yeah.
I like
that,
her.
That's what Natalie's thought was.
Yeah. I actually, this is my, what you were talking about character development. I wish we had a little more of her instead of she's just doing things, right? She's just mm-hmm. kind of moving the plot forward, and she's a very good actor. So I'd like to see what she can do.
I agree. So what else have you guys been watching that we haven't had a chance to talk about? Just a quick recap of a recent show you've watched that we don't talk about much on the podcast.
Well, I'll give you two oddball answers Number one, we are in the middle of the Australian Open, which is, I love a sport. I love tennis. The Australian Open, you know, we're on flipped time from them. So when they start in their morning, it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock here, which makes for great evening viewing. So I've been staying up way too late for the last week watching Australian Open matches. And it's just a lot of fun. You know, it's summer there and it's very cold here. So that's one. Two, Natalie and I have discovered this is the really oddball answer. There's a program called Travels by Narrowboat, where a guy in his early 50s has abandoned life on land and drives a narrowboat through the canal systems of England. And that's the whole show.
That sounds rad.
Is it reality or scripted?
It's real, and it started, this show is very charming. Everything about it is charming because this guy is just, he films himself, and it started on YouTube, and then Amazon bought the show, and so now it's on Amazon Prime, and he's like just okay at filming himself when he starts. So it's good. I mean, it's literally just him kind of trucking through rural England, and it's become our go-to, gonna go to bed in half an hour. Let's watch this show.
Adam, have you watched the reality show Alone?
Which one is that? Is that the where they try to survive and film themselves, and whoever lasts the longest wins?
Yeah, they're like in the Arctic, and yeah, that's all. They don't have hardly anything but a camera.
We went through a spell of that. For
is
sure.
Is it any good?
Yeah, it's very good. Now this show that I'm talking about now is very, very different from that. Like, this guy is just kind of he's puttering along. He is not. He's not risking anything. He's in cities the whole time. Yeah, Alone. That's a fun show. That's well done.
Okay, Donovan, anything you can give us a short recap of?
Yeah, I'm about halfway or two thirds of the way through an Israeli TV show on HBO called Valley of Tears. It's about
that's right. We debated talking about this on the podcast officially, but yeah, bring it up.
Yeah, it's about the Yom Kippur War. It's on pretty. The point of view is definitely the Israelis, more particularly soldiers in the IDF. It makes me feel like I knew some things about the Yom Kippur War. It makes me feel like I want to learn some more things, especially about the Syrians and the Egyptians. It can get a little creaky at times, but it's been, you know, they're about 45 minute episodes. It's been keeping me going. It's very dependent on coincidence, but you know, it's the kind of like these characters, right, that we've all met, are all their stories are coming together, and so whatever. It's very if nothing else, it's interesting.
And that's on HBO Max.
And kind of a weird tie-in to our Judas and the Black Messiah, at least according to this show. So three members of a tank crew are part of the Black Panthers, which I guess was took its name from the American Black Panthers and was a movement for, you know, social justice and equality, especially with regard to the Arab populations in Israel back in the 70s. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Interesting.
That is an interesting connection.
Didn't know that. Yeah. Me neither.
I have been watching Servant on Apple TV Plus.
Is that the M. Night one?
It is. He helped create it, I think, produced it. He's directed a few episodes, more than a couple. Tony Baskallop is one of the showrunners and head writers, I guess. So you guys probably aren't going to watch this. And if any of our listeners plan on watching Servant, you might want to stop. I'm going to probably drop a few spoilers. But that second season's airing now weekly on Fridays on Apple TV. That first season and the second season is so bizarre and creepy. It's good. It's actually good. So the idea is, the opening episode is the main one I'm going to spoil. There's a couple in a brownstone in Philadelphia who are tending to a really lifelike baby doll, like creepily lifelike.
Sounds normal so far.
And it's because they've lost their real kid, and this is like a coping mechanism for the lady, and she treats it like a real baby. And then when she leaves the house, the father, her husband, is just like, you know, throws the doll across the room, and it's just shocking to see that because the baby is that lifelike. They get a nanny for this fake baby to continue the facade, and the nanny, once the nanny gets there, the baby becomes real. It blows the doors open to everything. The wife never misses a beat. Just, oh, okay, hey, baby, here, I'm going to breastfeed you. It's just like...
This sounds really disturbing.
It's disturbing, and just to throw one more twist at you, Rupert Grint from Harry Potter plays the wife. He plays the wife's brother. So he's in every episode and coming in.
Ron.
He sort of plays the exasperated, what the fuck's going on with you two kind of character. Wait, the baby's real now? What the fuck just happened? Did this? And they're under the assumption that this nanny just brought a baby in and had, maybe it was hers. She's like 18. So maybe she had it at a wedlock and just brought it in. And just tending to it and letting them pretend it's theirs. So anyway, shit gets insane from there. If that wasn't insane enough, it just gets weirder.
It seems like it started sideways and just somehow really turned into it.
Yeah, it's like you keep thinking, there's no way this is going to be any weirder. Like, they're going to have to resolve this particular weirdness, but no, they do. So that's, and they're like 30 minutes, so it's really, really easy to digest on a Friday evening. All right, let's take a break, and we're going to come back on the other side and talk about the HBO Max movie, Judas and the Black Messiah. Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Folks, we have all your apparel needs linked on our website. If you go to shop, click on the TeePublic link there, you'll be taken to our online store. Check it out and get yourself any Alabama Take apparel, which will have more added to the shop in the coming months. There's always plenty to read and do on our website from culture on down. So go to thealabamatake.com at your leisure. Let's get back into this episode of Taking It Down. We were excited about this movie as soon as we had heard about it. It's going to be our pleasure to talk about Judas and the Black Messiah. It's a film on HBO Max, also in theaters, supposedly. Theaters still exist.
It's showing here.
Yeah, I think it's showing nearby. Most
is it really?
I'm pretty sure.
I was shocked to see the old, it's been so long since I typed in a movie name to pull up articles and showtimes popped up, and that happened.
It's directed by Shaka King. It's about the betrayal and demise of Black Panther chairman Fred Hampton, who's played by Daniel Kaluuya. I think that's right. You likely know him from Get Out, if nothing else. It also stars Lakeith Stanfield as William O'Neill, Bill O'Neill. And maybe you know Lakeith from Atlanta. That's one of my favorite roles from him. But you probably know him from he's starting to crop up in movies like Thanks for Calling. Was that the name of that film?
Thank you for calling.
But he's also in a few other things. The movie is based on the true events that happened in the 1960s to Fred Hampton and William O'Neill, as well as FBI. If you have not watched this movie yet, we'll be spoiling it going forward as much as you can spoil history. So it seems to be fairly rooted in what the events that happened. But before you jump off due to spoilers, we'll just go do a quick roundabout and say, would you recommend it or if you liked it kind of thing. Adam, what'd you think, just in general without plot points?
Strong recommend, if that's the game that we're playing. I thought it was excellent. Both as a movie and as, you know, sometimes historical fiction can get a little too teachy, I guess. Teachy or even preachy, especially.
Pedantic, yeah.
Yeah, and it didn't do that. It felt very human and compelling the entire time. Incredibly well done, incredible acting. Two thumbs up here.
Gotcha. Donovan, what'd you overall?
Yeah, for me, overall, there were some, this was kind of, first off, recommend. I think the acting is great. all three of kind of the leads. There were some scenes, there were bits where it felt a little creaky. Like there were scenes mm-hmm. that just didn't work as well, which I think for me showed up all the more because boy, oh boy, when this movie was humming, it was humming, you know, like when it was going, it was going, you know, sometimes some of the, you know, there were some parts felt maybe a little undercooked or on a scene by scene basis, just not as good as the rest of the movie, which is too bad because like the stuff that really worked, really worked.
It sounds exactly like you and I are going to have the same take on this. I thoroughly recommend it, but do know going in, it's not a fast paced piece. But Donovan's right. When it's going, it's going. So, well, let's dive into spoilers. So going forward, if you haven't seen it, come back to us if you are worried about getting history spoiled to you. But yeah, let's get into the specifics of this movie. Adam, get us going. What stood out to you?
I thought that the, you know, if you talk about the three main characters, and I would even include Deborah Johnson, played by Dominique Fishback, in that. I thought she did a fantastic job.
100%. I was thinking that too. Yeah,
she was great.
So kind of four main leads. I thought that it was played super well. I mean, the idea of a compromised undercover agent, so to speak, and a handler. I mean, that's not fresh ground for a movie to cover.
No, it was very Donnie Brasco.
It did it super well, though, to me. I think maybe my one, and I've read this in a few reviews, I can't say that I wish different actors were in it, but the one knock may be these were super young people when this happened. I mean, Fred Hampton was 21 when he died, which is stunning to me. I mean, he was on an FBI list when he was 19. I mean, you really got to stir some shit up to make it at that young an age. William O'Neill was only 17 when he was, I guess, brought in by the, I mean, you know, that the way that he was compromised is what happened. And it does make, you know, that relationship with the FBI agent was complex already, but I think he kind of considered him a father figure in real life because he was, you know, Roy Mitchell, played by Jesse Plemons, was well into his 30s at that point. So I don't know. They did all of that well, but all of the characters being roughly the same age maybe lost a bit of the historical dynamic that would have been there. But it was still played super well.
But then you would have lost this great acting. Yeah,
yeah. I it's not worth it to lose the acting.
One of my and it kind of, I don't know if it stuck the ending, but one of my favorite scenes, talking about Plemons and Lakeith Stanfield playing off of each other, was the when he invites him over to his house and is like, if you want the good stuff, here's the scotch. And, you know, it's just kind of that there was some really, kind of up until the end, but like there was some really understated, in a good way, stuff in that scene that I do wonder how that would have played if it had a younger man too, right? Because Lakeith Stanfield seems kind of like maybe a younger man would have played it more overawed, and Lakeith Stanfield seems wary.
Yeah,
he's about to be bitten.
That scene was very good, but my takeaway from that was like a bit of resentment that Mitchell has had this life that's allowed him to be in this position.
Yes,
to flourish where this guy is risking everything and still living a really rough life. Whereas had it been a younger actor, it could have been more, like you said, overawed and aspirational, you know, like, oh, there is this way that, and maybe without the cynicism of, but it's broken. And so I'm stuck in this situation.
Yep. I did kind of find myself overall wanting more from the FBI scenes, which is too bad. I don't know why exactly I felt that way, but it felt like a lot of times, and I think part of it was like I really like Jesse Plemons and I really like Lakeith Stanfield, and part of the times it seemed like they were kind of like getting on the verge of being great, and then it was, and then you'd go back to the Black Panthers, which was much more assured, maybe, or much more subtle, whatever was, it was really clicking when, especially with when Fred's in the scene, and the FBI scenes just didn't quite, they almost always slowed it down.
Agreed. And I think specifically when it wasn't Hoover, when Martin Sheen wasn't involved and it was,
yes,
it was just Mitchell and his boss or whatever. That was a less interesting relationship.
And it's too bad too, because I love, this comes from that one, like there, that one scene where he's in his house. I loved that Roy tells the story about investigating the murders in Mississippi. And he said, he's like, we're on the same side. And he's like, but he also says you can't cheat your way to equality, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And I loved that right until the end of that scene, like there was just so much unsaid in that scene. I thought it was, that part was great. So,
but then he does say the comparison of the Klan to the Black Panthers.
Yes,
he does. And it's also, that's the counter to Hampton saying they're just teaching you to be better slaves by saying to work for equality. But Mitchell, the more I read about him, they allude to that in the movie. I mean, he is a character in Mississippi Burning. So he, mm-hmm. he worked for justice there. It was his job. I don't know how, I don't know if you want to make him a good guy or bad guy or whatever, just a neutral. He had a few instances in his career where he kind of went against maybe the grain. Like he was able to get a conviction for a police officer in Chicago who had been assassinating drug dealers, kind of a rogue agent kind of guy. So I don't know. Framing him as this big area of gray, I thought that was really good.
Yeah, me too.
That and Jesse, I'm with Donovan. Jesse Plemons captivates me, and I don't know, I can't explain why. It's just it's almost deadpan in his delivery. Like he's not bringing anything to the scene other than, hey, I'm just going to tell you this. You know, I'm a straight shooter.
But there's always something behind his eyes, though, where you're like, oh, he's so good.
And so it's kind of like we could go back to Breaking Bad in that show where he was, hey, I'm innocent. I'm a knucklehead. I don't know what's going on. But at the same time, he was absolutely manipulative and evil.
In his obituary in the Chicago Tribune, he died in 2000. It said that he was a guy who could get people to talk, which when you
this is Roy Mitchell, obviously.
Roy Mitchell, yeah. Which when you read that, you think, well, that's you think of like Guantanamo or something, right? When they say, oh, he can make people talk. But his fellow officers, one of them told a story about going into a bar and they needed information. And he showed his badge and said, I need this information about this guy who used to work here. And the guy said, I don't know anything. The guy behind the bar. He said, he held it out again and he said, I want you to read all the information on this badge, go in the back and come back with the information that I need. He said, 2 minutes later, they had it. Jesse Plemons is the perfect guy to play that character.
100%.
He was not forceful, just do what I want kind of authority.
Yeah. Jesse Plemons doesn't force anything in a scene, and I think that's why he's so captivating. So what do you guys think about this? This is not a movie analysis question, but I'm just curious, where do you stand on the Black Panther ideology?
I mean, that's a loaded, loaded question, right?
Are you trying to get me fired?
No, I just, the more, I'll just go all the way back. I didn't know much about them until I was 14 or 15 and just sort of vaguely was taught, I think, that they're kind of bad. Like they're not necessarily a good thing. It wasn't pressed on me that they were evil or should be destroyed or terrorist or anything, but it was just like, oh, they're kind of bad. And that was about it. And the more I grow and the more I learned about them, the more I am very supportive and interested in, I kind of get so much of what they're having to say.
I agree with that. The radicalization in the face of, especially after you see it, maybe it's too clean cut a interpretation, but it's kind of been what we've been sold, right? Like that MLK is one path and Malcolm X is the other, and both ended the same way. So why would you not radicalize in the face of violence towards what you're trying to accomplish? And I, you know, I mean, if you, if their message is that, their message way back then was that societally we are structured to keep minorities down, keep the poor down, all these things. I mean, 2020, everybody accepting that there is systematic racism, you know, and that was like every mom was posting on Facebook about that. I mean, they were right all along, right? I mean, just to paint in very broad strokes here.
All in the name of capitalism.
Right.
And that's the part I really get behind.
Yeah. And I think they portrayed Fred Hampton unbelievably well. He was magnetic on screen. You could sense the fear of the establishment that a charismatic young black man might unify these disparate groups. That was very real. It's stunning to watch it play out. You know, this is one of those where, you know, to bring it back to the film again, you know how it's going to end, you know, going into it, and you're still saying, no, it can't. Please don't end that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially with magnetism of his portrayal. You know, it is always kind of interesting, like watching this movie, right? Like you got folks that are arming themselves because they're being hurt, right? Because they're being harassed, arming themselves because they know the authorities are not on their side. Is this not like every like power fantasy of the folks that stormed the Capitol on January 6th, right? Like, but when it, you know, when it,
well,
when
there's
it's
a big difference.
Well, I was going to say, when it's white folks, you get a pass. First off, it's imaginary, but when it's white folks, you get a pass. And kind of watching this movie through the eyes, you know, like there's nothing scarier on Fox News than a Black Panther, but it's like you're denied, you know, it's kind of like at the beginning of the movie, right? Like you're denied that full participation in supposedly American dreams and ideals. Kind of like at the beginning of the movie, Hampton says, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's in the Constitution. But when poor people want it, it's not democracy, it's socialism.
Exactly.
And it's always kind of interesting to me, especially watching movies like this and just kind of seeing some of the rhetoric around, you know, like things that happened in Baltimore and Ferguson and all over the U.S. When I go to Boston and you kind of read about, you know, basically a bunch of idiots hooting and hollering and throwing bricks at soldiers and things like that, and it's celebrated, right? And there's really not too much difference between like some of this kind of like our foundational like American revolutionary, you know, like the quote unquote Boston Massacre happened, right? Like, and that's just the most horrible thing. But it seemed to have happened because they were throwing rocks and stuff at the troopers.
If they had just done that.
I was going to say, you've got people who are like, well, the police had to fire. They were afraid, you know, and it's like the framing of the white American revolution and these actions as right when white people do it. And then just like, if you're not white, you just have to take it. Like you just have to, you can never, ever, you can't resist in any way. You can't do your own thing.
It's talked about in this film, how the black man is the person who's going to come and rape and pillage. That's an exact quote from Hoover in the movie. And that's the scare. There's someone to fear, but if a white person is doing something very similar, then it's revolutionary or important, or why haven't, you know, what's wrong, instead of, oh, they're this bad, you know, being.
I really liked the scenes. I don't know why, but where they're handing out the flyers for like the breakfast programs and things like that. When they go into the bar, right? The bar that's Crown's territory, and it's where I just thought there was some good, like, it should have been a boring scene, but I was just like, this is so fascinating, like, to see what's going on here. And then I'll tell you what, Shaka King has an absolute eye for some of these action scenes. Like when the police and the Black, you know, burn the Black Panthers headquarters. Absolutely riveting. And the end of the, real spoilers, the end of the movie, I felt like I wanted to throw up the way that it was portrayed. Just the naked power, right? The flex of it all, right? Like, you can't do, we can kill you. We can literally kill you, and you can't do anything to us.
So much of that was just held up a mirror to today. It was two or three times that I thought about news. This piece of news from Rochester, New York. Have you been following?
Yeah.
9-year-old girl getting pepper sprayed. Watching that and watching the police handle that all white, and this 9-year-old girl, black girl in Rochester, New York, who's having a bit of a breakdown and problem. But the thing she keeps saying is, "I want my dad. I want my dad." And I'm just breaking my heart. And it is hard to watch. And I kept some of these scenes in Judas and the Black Messiah kept reminding me of that particular instances, how police just have no idea who they're policing. They have no idea in this movie and in Rochester. They have, like, who is this person? What do they need first? And let me address that before I throw on the cuffs and shove her in the back of a car and pepper spray her.
You know, talking about the directing and how that's been, how that was illustrated, the shootout scene, yeah. I thought did a great job of.
Same.
And here's why I thought it was great. It was great as an action scene. It was exciting. Exciting is the wrong, not like good exciting. It was stimulating in a your heartbeat goes up kind of way. You're horrified for them stuck in that building, but including the crowd on the side.
Yeah.
That was the genius piece of direction to me, because you do feel like Donovan said, it's the flex. It's the, we're doing this and there's so many of you right there, but we don't care because we have all the power, right? And it reminds me of, I thought of it when I'm watching, it's like, well, nobody had a camera phone to like see what led to this. And it kicks off because they, like you said, Blaine, are in the neighborhood policing that they don't understand. Like, the only thing they can do is antagonize. And maybe that was played for, like, supervillain quality. But when they're sitting on top of the car saying all of the demeaning things to the people walking by, it's like, well, of course you want to shoot at them.
And the Black Panther isn't let off. The Black Panthers as a group aren't really let off the hook. They, you know, you get this scene of one character who went into the store and saw police being bullying and harassing a black owned business, and he goes in and shoots them.
That you do ask the question, though, because that situation could have led to death at the hands of the cops if anything had gone sideways. I mean, we know that still now in 2021. And I thought that was a great scene because it makes you confront. We are supposed to think that he shouldn't have done that, right? But
right.
What creates the circumstance where somebody feels led to go in and defend their community with a gun when you can't defeat the Chicago Police Department, you know? Like, ultimately, even if he wins that situation, the city of Chicago is coming in with force, and mm-hmm. You can't win. So, like, it's just fascinating to me to stand up to that level of power. Obviously, he's shot, and that kind of creates a whole snowball effect of when the Jake Winters character goes in and gets into the shootout with the cops. That's a whole other thing. But I don't know. That scene was really, you talk about holding a mirror up. It makes you reconsider your ethics in that moment.
Yeah. So much of this movie, at least for me watching it, was just, you know, there are things that growing up white in America are just kind of knee jerks for you. Like, you know, when you're little, you're like, cops are good. They're helpers, you know, things like that. And I felt like, first off, this movie made me want to learn more because, you know, shame on me. I really was like, the Crowns, who are those? You know, like, I didn't know some of this history, right? Probably because some of that's because like what Blaine said is you know, in history books that I read growing up, learning about U.S. history, the Panthers are kind of in passing, right? And you just kind of have this vague idea that they're bad, right? They're violent.
They were people. A radical group that existed.
Yes.
That's pretty much good.
I felt like a lot of scenes in this movie, at least for me, like this movie was very good at kind of putting me more in the perspective of the Black Panthers characters and making them my viewpoint more or less, and kind of challenging some assumptions and things like that. And
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it was good. I love Lakeith Stanfield too. Like, the acting was great.
I realized the scene had to be compressed for time, but I did find it a little hard to swallow that any group of white people with a Confederate flag hanging up would just kind of let a Black Panther come in and take the stage. That seemed hard to swallow to me because I know so, or I grew up with so many people who would have a Confederate flag. Yeah, I don't know. That just felt, and also joined them at a later date, you know, like a week later or a month later, whatever.
That made me want to learn more because I was like, this is if this is like any, like, I want to know what happened here because that's just unbelievable. Like working with is it the Lords, the Puerto Rican folks, mm-hmm. the Independents and the Crowns? Okay, sure. But like,
there's no racist white guy going to stand next to the Crowns, the Black Panthers and the Puerto Rican group. And I just didn't think that happened.
I felt like I wanted to know more about that because I was really
That's a real thing, right?
They for sure should.
The Rainbow Coalition.
I will say that the movie did feel a bit disjointed at times. I think we discussed that. There were times where I felt like a scene didn't have enough of a segue and I was a little uncertain.
Yeah.
The pacing to me was a bit on the slow side, though nothing horrible.
It was funny. I felt the same thing, Blaine, and I was like, I don't know why it feels slow to me because these scenes are not necessarily moving slowly.
Mm-mm,
but right. Something about the overall pacing was kind of like, huh, okay.
Though, if nothing else, viewers should find a clip of that opening scene of Fred Hampton with the hat pulled down. And if you're not drawn in there, I kept thinking, what is he going to say? I bought in on him immediately. He's sitting there in, sort of in his introversion and had the hat pulled down and then gives the magnificent talk.
I thought that was great. I thought every character's introduction was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Agreed.
You know, one of the things I appreciated about the portrayal of Hampton, you know, he didn't get his really huge speech until he's out of prison, well into the movie. He did so much. I guess they did a good job not exaggerating. You think of these people as like, that it's always the March on Washington. You know, obviously that's a different, mm-hmm. a different era, a different group, but he threatened the feds by going into bars and speaking at small colleges, you know, in that level of organization. I thought that was great. And then the movie did a fine job of portraying that.
How floored were you by the ending, or did you know what William O'Neill's demise was?
I did not know what his demise was. And that was, you know, I think to bring it all the way back to what I was talking about at the beginning with their ages, it makes it feel even grosser that he was, and you could argue this with some people all day, I'll say he was exploited, you know, into a situation that derailed his life. And I mean, to get his thoughts out and then immediately, you know, apparently he ran into traffic. That's how he did it.
Wow.
Yeah, just terrible. And he had tried it before. So this was not, I don't think the family was all that shocked, and that's just such a tragedy.
Tough ending. And I guess we all do recommend the movie, despite its some flaws, which are fairly minor, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's two thumbs up for me. Strong right.
Oh, yeah. This is, I don't think you're going to regret the 2 hours that it takes to watch this.
It's intense. Yeah. Buckle up.
It is intense.
Even if all you do is just learn something and don't find it necessarily quote unquote entertaining.
I mean, do you like acting?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll wrap there. We appreciate everyone listening. Find us on your podcast app, rate us, review us, and tell a friend, please. We'll talk to everyone next week.